به وبداره الأرض فما كان له من فئة ينصرونه من دون الله وما كان من المنتصرين وأصبح الذين تمنوا مكانه بالأمس يقولون ويكأن الله يبسط الرزق لمن يشاء من عباده ويقدر له لولا أمن الله علينا لخسف بنا ويكأنه لا يفلح الكافرون تلك الدار الآخرة نجعلها للذين لا يريدون علوا في الأرض ولا فسادا والعاقبة للمتقين من جاء بالحسنة فله خير منها ومن جاء بالسيئة فلا يجزى الذين عملوا السيئات إلا ما كانوا يعملون إن الذي فرض عليك القرآن لرادك إلى معاد قل ربي أعلم من جاء بالهدى ومن هو في ضلال مبين وما كنت ترجو أن يلقى إليك الكتاب إلا رحمة من ربك فلا تكونن ظهيرا للكافرين ولا يصدنك عن آيات الله بعد إذ أنزلت إليك وادع إلى ربك ولا تكونن من المشركين ولا تدع مع الله إلها آخر لا إله إلا هو كل شيء هالك إلا وجهه له الحكم وإليه ترجعون صدق الله العلي العظيم صلوات
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين حبيب إله العالمين أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المنتجبين. قال الله في كتابه الحكيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وكذلك نولي بعض الظالمين بعضا وكذلك نولي بعض الظالمين بعضا بما كانوا يكسبون صدق الله العلي العظيم وصلوا على محمد وآل محمد. Last week we were exploring chapter number 6, verse 127. And the concept that's mentioned in that verse, or the two concepts that are mentioned together is, the first is the straight path, as-salat al-mustaqim, which of course appears a number of times throughout the Quran. And the second is Dar al-Salam, the abode of peace. And the idea we mention is that the path that's mentioned, the sirat, leads to the abode of peace. And scholars have, and commentators have described the abode of peace as something that you arrive at that causes you internal peace. And that word, salam, is mentioned a number of times in the Quran. And most prominently, it's mentioned as a greeting or a saying that is often repeated when one enters paradise, when one enters heaven. And that's the first thing that you hear. Salamun qawlan min rabbin rahim. You hear salam. You hear peace. And that's truly the greatest reward that one can attain upon arriving into heaven or paradise or whatever you want to call it, is peace. It's not the material things, it's peace. It's inner peace. Now, what's interesting is the verses that come directly after that, verse 128, 129, and 130, they draw basically a conversation between man and jinn. Because first God talks about what happens when you walk on the straight path and you arrive at peace, but then that's juxtaposed with, and usually this is how the verses of the Quran are arranged, that God speaks of peace and God speaks of heaven, but then the opposite is also mentioned right away. And so God tells us of almost a conversation that takes place between man and jinn. Ya ma'shar al-jinni wal-ins. The two troublemakers, basically. And the reason that they are addressed without the angels being addressed is because, as we know, we believe that angels, because they do not possess free will, meaning that they do not possess will to act upon their own, therefore they do not possess the capacity to disobey God. Their function is to obey God. Their function is to carry out the commands of God. Whereas both men and jinn, they have that on their side. Free will, choice, freedom, which can lead them down either path. And so, it's interesting because the Quran tells us, وَكَذَلِكَ نُوَلِّ بَعْضَ الظَّالِمِينَ بَعْضًا, that whatever goes on in between them, and the verses prior, they describe how man and jinn speak about each other on the Day of Judgment. They describe one another in a way where they say that, well, we profited off of them and they profited off of us. Man says to jinn that you profited off of us, but we also profited off of you. There's a sort of mutual relationship. There's an alliance between troublemaking human beings and troublemaking jinn. Now, we know that not all jinn are troublemakers. Surah al-Jinn in the Quran describes some of them as disobedient, but some of them as obedient. In the same way that not all human beings, I mean, a lot of them are, but not all human beings are troublemakers. There are some good people out there as well. I mentioned the story last week during the Friday prayer. For those of you who were there, if you weren't, I mentioned the story of Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, how he had mentioned in a parenting book that he wrote, he said that, you know, he grew up in a time where there was a lot of stuff to worry about, you know, war and famine and nuclear war and all that stuff. He said, I always felt safe around my parents because my parents assured me that everything was going to be okay. And he said, my mom taught me the phrase, always look for the helpers. Always look for the helpers. Everywhere that you go, there are going to be people that are going to want to help, that have good intentions, that want to create. In the same way that you'll find people that want to do the opposite of that. They want to destroy. He said, but in my life, you know, the attitude that I maintained, the behavior that he followed through with, was that of looking for the helpers, even though things were going wrong. And that's why the entire world, you know, could be in war and conflict, you know, and all you got to do is watch an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and it'll cheer you up. That was the attitude, that was his attitude that he brought forth. So what they say is that the men, the troublemaking men and women, mankind, and troublemaking jinn, is that God says that since they've profited off of one another, since they have that relationship with one another, he says, وَكَذَلِكَ نُوَلِّ بَعْضَ الظَّالِمِينَ بَعْضًا. Thus do we make the wrongdoers allies of one another. Meaning what? Meaning that if you have an attitude where you're looking to make trouble, you're going to find allies. You're going to find friends. You're going to find collaborators. You're going to find people who are going to participate and follow right alongside you. At the same time, if you're looking to do good, you're going to find people that will align themselves with what you believe in. And they'll be there side by side with you. You know, it's interesting because sometimes you know, you watch documentaries, and for a while growing up, personally, I was very fascinated with World War II history. I have no idea why, but World War II history, learning about in high school. And so I began to study it a little bit more in depth. And, you know, you learn about the terror and the destruction, the tyranny, and just widespread trouble that was caused by Hitler and Nazi Germany and the Third Reich, and how they went across Europe, conquering one country after another. You know, what they did in terms of the atrocities that they committed with the Holocaust, you know, declaring war on smaller nations, grabbing whatever they can. And it was always fascinating to me because unless you actually study it in depth, you don't realize that all of that trouble happened because of alliances. There were strategic alliances there. You know, you hear about how the country of, I think it was Poland, was in the middle, and you know, Russia learns of Germany's intention to invade Poland. They said, okay, well, if you can't beat them, join them. So let's invade Poland as well and split it between us. And both of those nations, Germany and Russia, they split Poland in between them. That was a strategic alliance that they had. And they didn't really like each other. They went to war against one another, but there was a strategic alliance there. They had an interest, and the other country had an interest. And so whenever you look at mischief that's happening or trouble that's happening in the world, there's usually an alliance. And God says that, look, we're going to find allies for the people that want to create trouble. We'll find people that are going to support them. And there's an important lesson to be understood there, is that just because you see numbers, don't think that just because there are numbers that the right thing is happening. You could have people who have a lot of numbers, but they're doing the wrong thing. So numbers doesn't necessarily, if people have numbers on their side, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing the right thing. So God says that, look, we'll match make. We'll put people together. If they're looking to do evil, we'll find people who are going to do evil. At the same time, when they look to do good, we'll also create walaya between them. We'll also create friendships between them. And it's very interesting because the way that the Quran puts forth this concept, it's as if the jinn, and of course the shaytan, Iblis, being amongst one of the jinn, it's as if there is control. See, the word nuwalli is used. So nuwalli comes from wilaya. And one of the meanings of wilaya is authority or influence. And there's a narration that actually quotes what the shaytan is saying. He says to people the following. He said that, I have no authority over you, except that I called you and you responded to me. Imagine that. The shaytan has no direct control over people. It's not direct control. If you remember a few weeks ago, we spoke about the different spheres of control. You have direct control, you have indirect control, and you have no control. So there are things in our life that we simply have no control over. There are other things in our life that we have direct control, which is our behavior, our actions. And then there's that gray area in between, indirect control. And with indirect control, and an example of that is other people's behavior. It's not that you have no control over other people's behavior. You know, you can, to a certain extent, influence other people's behaviors. But what this verse says, and what the shaytan actually says, he says, I had no authority over you except that I called you and you responded to me. That's all I had to do. I had to call you and you responded. I didn't take you by the throat. I didn't put you in a headlock or anything like that. All I had to do is call you. It's interesting. There was a scholar who one day, he said that he saw Iblis in a dream. And so he had a conversation with Iblis. He had a conversation with the devil. And he says throughout that story, he says that Iblis was basically showing him his arsenal. he was showing him the weapons that he used. He's showing him how he tempts people and how he kind of brings people in. And so he said, some people, I really need this really thick, heavy-duty chain to wrap around people to drag them in. And he says, for others, he says, I just need a small little rope or a thread. And he says, for some people, I don't need a chain, I don't need a rope, I don't need a thread. I just need to point them this way. And they'll willingly come to me. And so sometimes we need to assess ourselves, where our hearts are, and God forbid we become in a position where all the shaitan has to do is point us in a direction. He doesn't need to tug us, but all he has to do is point us towards a direction, and we move towards that direction. So what is this whole idea of the men and jinn profiting from one another? So what commentaries tell us is that this exchange between them is that humans call upon the jinn, thinking that the jinn are going to protect them, when in reality, the jinn cannot protect them and they cannot harm them. And it's very interesting because the whole idea of jinn is mentioned throughout the Quran, but only when it comes to Meccan verses. By the time the revelation starts in Medina, the only jinn that's mentioned after that is Iblis, Shaytan. That's it. But the whole idea of jinn, generally, having control over people or having influence over people, are only mentioned in the Meccan surahs. It's as if there's a different phenomenon, something else that happens when the Muslims move to Medina. So that's what happens when relationships are based or built on false premise and false values, the wrong values. So we have to ask ourselves, when it comes to our friendships, when it comes to our alliances, when it comes to our, whatever you want to call it, collaborations, the people that we work with, are those relationships built on solid values, on solid principles, or are they built on false assurances? And I see many times this happens within the family structure, is that sometimes relationships are established, people can even get married for the wrong reason. People get married because of a business transaction. You know, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. And so the problem, and the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, speaking about man and jinn, but that can happen man to man as well, or woman to woman as well, in that our relationships are based off of false assurances. They're based off of false premises as well. So on the other hand, we have great alliances. So in the same way that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَكَذَلِكَ نُوَلِّي بَعْضَ الظَّالِمِينَ, when he talks about the oppressors, that we create influence, some of them above others, there's the same also happens. Wilaya, or authority and influence, it happens the other way as well. And the number one alliance in our life, the most important alliance, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, and we read this after the verse of Ayat al-Kursi, اللَّهُ وَلِيُّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا, that those who believe, their ally, their protector, in the same way that God says that on the Day of Judgment, some men will take some jinn as allies and vice versa. He says that when it comes to the believers, not the dhalimeen, but the mu'mineen, the believers, that number one, God is their greatest ally. That's the best alliance you can have in your life. That's the most solid relationship. And when it comes to our good alliances, when it comes to our good relationships, when it comes to our positive relationships, the glue that holds that together is trust. Think about this. Trust is what glues solid relationships together. Now, what's that Arabic word for trust? Does anyone know? Thiqa, yes, but I'm talking about trust in terms of not just trusting what someone says, but to give someone a trust, something to keep with them. What's that word? Amana. Amana. So amana is what keeps relationships together. Amana is the glue that keeps relationships solid. And of course, we come from a rich tradition that teaches us that the essence of our faith, the essence of our character, is not our actions, it's not our prayers, But rather, it's our amana. It's our trustworthiness. Imagine the relationship that the Prophet was able to maintain with people who did not believe in what he believed in terms of God and, you know, faith and the hereafter, was amana, as-sadiq al-amin. He maintained that reputation, the truthful and the trustworthy one, as-sadiq al-amin. Even though people, those very same people, did not choose to follow him. We have a narration from our fourth Imam, Al-Imam Zain al-Abidin alayhi salam, and he says the following, and this is one of the, you know, this narration is so profound, it's so mind-boggling, and you know it's true because it comes, and it's truthful because it comes from the Imam. He says the following, he says that if my father's murderer was to trust me with the dagger that he used to kill my father, that I would give it back to him if he requested it. Think about that. If my father's murderer was to give me the dagger that he used to take his life, my father's life, as a trust, as an amana, I would give it back to him. That's his character. That's who he was. So trust is the glue that holds solid alliances together. And so, understanding that, we need to think for ourselves and assess and make an audit of our relationships, the relationships that we have in our life, whether it's with our immediate family members, whether it's with coworkers that we have, whether it's with people that, you know, we do business with, whether it's our own spouses and our own children. We need to ask ourselves, is that ingredient there? Is trust there? You know, I read something very, very profound. It said the following. It said, it is a greater compliment to be trusted than to be loved. Think about this for a moment. If you're raised in a household, normally a child automatically feels love. A child in a household feels love, feels affection. But for a child to be trusted is something even more powerful. Many children today, they grow up in households where they feel loved. There's no doubt about that. But the question is, do they feel trusted? Because trust is what opens up relationships. What I was reading today was very interesting. It said the following. It said that when trust is present, mistakes are forgiven and forgotten. If you trust someone, you know that person's intentions. So even if that person slips up and makes a mistake, you know what's going on. You know that they are not intentional in that mistake. You know that they're not intentional in doing harm. So if you've ever had one of those relationships where, you know, those really high trust relationships, where if someone says something wrong or slips up or does something wrong, it's a mistake, you don't really expect, you know, that person to ask for forgiveness. You would know what I'm talking about in those very high trust relationships. But sometimes we're in relationships that are loving, but there's not a whole lot of trust there. Trust is what glues relationships together, and trust is what allows us to basically take our relationships to the next level. And so think about this. Think about your relationship, and we said your number one alliance is with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allahu waliyul ladina amanu. Ask yourself, do I trust God? And does God trust me? More importantly, do I trust myself? Think about it. Think about the trust that God has towards us. You know, trust allows you to give without guarantee of return. And God says that everything in this universe submits. Everything in this universe submits. Even the inanimate objects. The mountains and the rivers and the stars that you see in the sky and the planets. They all submit. The only thing, the only creature, the only being that has a choice whether to submit or not submit is the human being. Believe or disbelieve. And yet, I mentioned this the other day, And yet, at the same time, with all of that going on, we're still on top of the food chain, right? We're still pretty high up there. We haven't yet met a species or anything that exists that's above us in the food chain. We're able to use resources from the sun, and we're able to use all these different resources from the earth towards our advantage. But there's no expectation from God that we will reciprocate that trust and that love towards Him. Imagine how powerful that is. Even sometimes as parents, you know, we talk about unconditional love, right? But I don't know, sometimes I think maybe not. Maybe with some families there isn't unconditional love. But trust is something that takes a relationship to the next level. So think about it from God's perspective. God is saying, I trust you. I've given you everything. Not only do I have love, not only do I have affection, but I trust you. Are you going to reciprocate that trust to me? Think about that. Think about if we're doing enough to reciprocate not just the love and the affection, but the trust that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us. Think if your actions and your behaviors and your attitude and your mindset and all of that speaks of your trust towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Or is it that when it comes to our trust, everyone else has a priority and God is in last place? And we can say one thing, but we can mean something else. I'll leave off with this note. Since we're talking about great alliances, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that alliances exist between non-believers, but alliances also exist between believers. Our number one alliances, where trust is most needed, where love and affection is most needed, is in our homes. If it's not found in our homes, if it's not given in our own homes, it's meaningless, it's pointless for it to be given anywhere else. And sometimes we forget our priorities, and sometimes we place people outside of the home as a priority above people that are within the home. And it's natural. It's natural because sometimes, you know, you see the person at home day after day, month after month, week after week, day in, day out. And it's easy to lose sight of the person that's in your home. But the biggest test that God has put for us, and He says this, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that our families and our wealth, but our families are considered a fitna. What is a fitna? A fitna means a test. Fitna literally comes from a word which means to place something under very high pressure. So to test something is to place it under very high pressure. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to allow us to protect our homes. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to fill our hearts with love and affection and trust for Him. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He remains as our ally and our protector. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bring those people in our life that remind us of Him. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wal asri innal insana lafi khusr illa alladhina amanu wa amilu salihat wa tawasaw bil haqqi wa tawasaw bil sabr. Brothers and sisters, remember all of those worldwide who are in need of our dua, inshallah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma aghfir lil mu'minina wal mu'minat wal muslimina wal muslimat al ahya'i minhum wal amwat. Tabi' baynana wa baynahum bil khayrat. Innaka mujibu al-da'awat. Innaka qadhi al-hajat. Innaka ala kulli shay'in qadir. برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين وصلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين.
تنکیو حاج آقا. برای سلامتی حاج آقا سید مهدی قزوینی و خانواده محترمش یه صلوات محبت بفرمایید. اللهم صل علی محمد. I have only one announcement regarding the tomorrow, inshallah. The salatul jumu'ah start at 12 o'clock and on Saturday there will be a birthday of the Hazrat Zainab Salamullah Alayha. Congratulate to the Aga Imam Zaman Ajallallah Ta'ala Farjo Sharif and all of you. Inshallah, we will see you tomorrow for the soul of all mu'minin and mu'minat, especially Haji Ilham Faqih, Haji Aga Qasim Hatami, و مرحومه مغفوره ماه منیر محمدزاده جمیعا رحم الله من غر الفاتحه مع السلامه.